Well, recently I was doing a bit of research. I came across 9 reasons why God created Eve. 9 reasons why God created Eve. First, God was worried that Adam would get lost in the garden and would not ask for directions. Secondly, God knew that one day Adam would need someone to help him find the remote. Third, God knew Adam would never go out himself and buy a new fig leaf. Fourth, God knew Adam would never make a doctor's or dentist appointment on his own. Fifth, God knew Adam would never remember which night to put out the bins. Sixth, God knew Adam would never handle the responsibility of childbirth. Seventh, God knew Adam would need help locating his gardening implements. Eighth, God knew Adam would need someone else to blame. 9, God finished making Adam, scratched his head, and said, "I can do better than that." Well, today is Mother's Day, a day when we can celebrate those special women in our lives, especially giving thanks for those who play the role of mother in our lives in various ways, remembering as well moms who are no longer with us and giving thanks to God for them. Interestingly, this Mother's Day weekend also coincides with International Women's Day. And to celebrate all of this, I want to think for a few moments this morning about the power of a woman to change the world, and in particular, the power of a faith-filled woman to change the world. Looking at the life of Moses' mother, who is called Jochebed. Although she's not named until we find Moses and Aaron's genealogy, their family record in Exodus chapter 6, we find her story here in Exodus chapter 2. And if you've read Exodus, we were looking at it together as a church last year, or maybe you've seen the movie Prince of Egypt or watched the Ten Commandments starring Charlton Heston or whatever, you'll know the plot line. In Genesis, we read how God had delivered his people by raising up Joseph, who won the respect of Pharaoh and all the people of the land by delivering them, saving them from famine and starvation. But by the time we get to the beginning of Exodus, Joseph is long dead. And decades, if not centuries, had passed. God's people, Israel, had entered, they had started off life in Egypt as a small extended family. But between the end of Genesis and the beginning of Exodus, Israel had grown into a mighty nation. And a new Pharaoh was on the scene. A new Pharaoh had come to power, one who knew nothing of Joseph's story and probably was looking around him and was a little confused as to why all of these Israelites were all over his land in the first place. In fact, we get a window into the paranoia of that Pharaoh, the fear that was going on through his head in chapter 1, as Noel was reminding us, where we read that he had become so worried that the Hebrews might rise up against him and overrun his land that he orders to have all of the Hebrew boy babies killed. This is how great a nation that Israel had become. Right under the Egyptians' noses. Pharaoh was so paranoid and fearful that he decided to enslave the Israelites, to try to beat them into submission, to try to destroy them as a nation. He put slave masters over them who treated them harshly and forced them to build cities for them. But the more they were oppressed, the Bible says, the bigger the nation they became. And in their trouble, God kept blessing them. They grew and they grew, and when Pharaoh saw that his strategy wasn't working, he ramped it up. He moved on to the next level, from enslavement to genocide. He commanded that the Hebrew midwives kill all the baby boys but let the girls live. But do it in such a way, he told the midwives, that the mothers wouldn't realize it, so that they would think that they were having stillbirths. It was a cunning plan. If he killed all the baby boys, then the girls would be forced to intermarry with the Egyptians, and they'd entirely lose their cultural identity. For all intents and purposes, the nation would slowly but surely be forced into becoming Egyptians. Problem solved. But as we soon discover, the midwives had a cunning plan of their own, and they didn't do what Pharaoh commanded. It was a bold act of civil disobedience on their part, one that God honored and wrote into the history books so that the names of those midwives who honored him and were faithful to him were recorded here, Shiprah and Puah. They were remembered for all time. But when that didn't work, Pharaoh extended the order to all of his people that all of them were to be responsible for killing these Hebrew baby boys. They were to be thrown into the Nile, to be drowned or to suffer death by exposure or worse. Now, imagine with me what it would have been like in those days to be an expectant mother, to be an expectant mom. And as you're going through the process of your pregnancy, fear is beginning to well up inside, gripping your heart. What if? What if it's a baby boy? Will I lose my child? But once again, we discover that Pharaoh's plan backfired. Because far from getting rid of the people of Israel and suppressing their cultural identity, the people just continued to grow. And now, through his desire to kill all the baby boys, look what happens. Moses is born. And in her desperation, Moses' mother, Jochebed, comes up with this magnificent plan of her own. I think all mothers think their babies are the bee's knees. Am I right? All mothers think their babies are the most beautiful children in the world, the bee's knees. But when Moses was born and when Jochebed saw him, there was something different about Moses. We're not exactly sure what it was, but there was something special. We don't know how she knew, but Moses' mother knew that she should try to save him. She was going to do all that she could to save him. And chapter 2 tells us about how she did it, how she went about planning it all out, and how she executed her plan, putting Moses into this little watertight basket to sit in the reeds close to where Pharaoh's daughter would bathe, in hopes that when she saw him, instead of killing him, Pharaoh's daughter would save him. There was good reason to think that the plan could work. To the Egyptians, as we were reminded in our series not long ago, the Nile River was a god. And perhaps Pharaoh's daughter would think that this so-called god, the god of the Nile River, had delivered this Hebrew baby boy into her hands to look after him, to care for him. And whatever the case, Jochebed positions Moses' basket in just the right place. And then she tells Miriam, her daughter, Moses' sister, to wait in just the right spot so that she could step in and offer a solution should Pharaoh's daughter need someone to nurse him. And this is just what happened. In God's grace, Moses was saved from the water by Pharaoh's own daughter, who was determined to then raise Moses as her own. Now think about the irony here. Not only had Pharaoh's plans backfired, now they had become the very means by which God's people would be saved, because now Moses would be raised to get the finest of educations. He would get the finest military training to become a powerful military general. And it was all in preparation so that one day Moses could rise up and become Pharaoh himself. Who better to step in and to deliver God's people when the time was right? As we fast forward through the life of Moses, we discover that Exodus is a story of God's salvation. That's what's going on here. God was on the move. He was about to step in and save his people. And the message that we learn as we read through the whole sweep of the Bible, is that he wants to save us today as well. Not just eternally, but in the same way that Moses came to deliver his people from slavery in Egypt, God sent his Son to deliver us from all that holds us back from experiencing the freedom and the true life that is theirs for the taking in God's kingdom. But here's the thing. In the case of God's people back then, deliverance would never have come if it had not been for the faith-filled faithfulness of Moses' mother, Jochebed. She courageously stepped in and she stepped up. She stepped out in faith. She trusted God. She wasn't acting on a whim here. She wasn't going out on a limb. She was trusting in the promises of God that he had given to their forefathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, that God would bless his people, that they would be a blessing to the whole world. And look what God did. You know, it's interesting here. In our passage, Moses' dad, he's called Amram. Moses' dad is never mentioned here. He's nowhere to be found. It's Jochebed, Moses' mother, who is mentioned for what she did. And think about what happened here. The whole story of Moses being placed in this basket and chucked in the river, it didn't just happen. This wasn't a random thought that she had one morning. This would have taken planning. It would have taken preparation. She would have had to watch closely to identify Pharaoh's daughter's movements, to her habits, to see where she liked to bathe and when. She spied out just the right spot there in the river to place the basket so that Pharaoh's daughter's attendants would see it or at least hear the baby crying and go over to have a look. Jochebed would have rehearsed the plan with her daughter Miriam time and again. She would have gotten Miriam to act out the part. You can just imagine the scene with me, what it would have been like. In his book on Moses' life, Charles Swindoll imagines it. He puts it like this, this conversation between Jochebed and Miriam. Make it look like a surprise, Miriam. Make it seem spontaneous. You can do it, honey. I know you can. And I'll be waiting. I'll be watching. I'll be right here ready to go home with you when it's done. I think as well here, a lot of prayer would have gone into this moment as well. As Jochebed looked to God, as she trusted God for her son's life, as she trusted God to save his people, as she then devised her plan. And on that day, then, with her heart in her mouth, she said to Miriam, run along. Wait by the river. My guess is that Jochebed was standing there at a distance. She was watching the scene unfold. They found Moses. And now Miriam is speaking with them, and then she's running towards her mother, smile on her face. Any of us in this room can put ourselves in Jochebed's sandals in that moment. We feel the relief and the joy that she would have felt. Her son had been delivered from death to life. And not only did she now have the protection of Pharaoh's daughter, she would be paid to raise her own son. She would be given time to love him and to raise him up in the knowledge of the Lord, before he would then be returned to the royal court at probably the age of 3 or 4 to become the son of Pharaoh's daughter. As the story unfolds, we discover God's hand underneath it all, working through Jochebed's faith-filled plan. Little did she know that in God's hands, her faithfulness would play such a key role in God's raising up Moses in order to save his people. And sure, Moses' dad was there. He was in the background. He would have been part of the story as well, protecting Moses in those early days before they put him in the basket and so on. But it was Jochebed who plays the main role in saving and nurturing Moses. And for that, both Jochebed and Amram, mom and dad, appear as a couple in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11. We call the Hall of Faith, where the writer of Hebrews reflects back on all of the greats of the faith, the greats of old. And he tells us this. He says, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. But the fact remains that it was the faith of one woman who stood at the heart of the deliverance of God's people back then. Just as thousands of years later, it was the faith of another woman, Mary, the mother of Jesus, who surrendered her life and in obedience gave her life into God's hands to be used as God willed, who now stands at the heart of our salvation and our deliverance as well. Because here's the thing, we all need to be delivered from something. Just as God's people of old needed themselves to be delivered from enslavement to Pharaoh in Egypt, who in his day was considered to be some kind of God with a small g. The Bible tells us that without Christ in our lives, we are slaves as well. Listen to what Paul writes in Galatians chapter 4. He says this, but when the set time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, that's Mary, born under the law to redeem those under the law, that we might receive adoption to sonship. Because you are his sons, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, the Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but God's child. And since you are his child, God has made you also an heir. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those who by nature are not gods. Like the Israelites of old, we either live for God or we live for the gods of this world. Anything we live our lives for apart from God will only lead to slavery and death. Instead of leading to fuller life, living for those things only leads to a sense of bondage and ultimately spiritual death. That's what the Bible tells us. And that's what our experience bears out. But Jesus came that we would be set free, that we would be able to now live life and experience life in all of its fullness. That means that the way to true freedom lies in giving up trying to live for ourselves and instead turning to and living for Christ. When you turn your life towards Jesus Christ, when you start living for him and serving him with your life, that's when you find true freedom and happiness. And at the end of the day, that's the salvation that all of us need. That's the deliverance all of us long for deep down. Saving from those things that we have made in our lives to be more important than God, so that we can now be set free to serve and worship God alone, to experience life the way it was always meant to be. As we bring things to a close this morning, you know, what strikes me most, even just looking at these examples this morning from Jochebed's life, from Mary's life, is the power of a faith-filled woman to change the world that we see here. And just as God's people of old would never have been saved if Jochebed hadn't trusted God and stepped out in faith to save her son, the salvation that you and I so desperately need in our lives would never have been possible if the mother of Jesus, Mary, had not taken that same step of faith and obedience for herself when she surrendered herself to God. To be used by God to bring about the fulfillment of all of God's purposes and promises for his people. God's people of old were saved from slavery through Jochebed's efforts to save her son. But today we are saved from slavery of sin and shame through Mary's faith-filled willingness to not just bear a son, Jesus, but then to give up her son to death. To die on the cross for your sins and for mine. And in both of these cases, the history of the whole world turned on the faith of a faith-filled woman. I wonder, this Mother's Day, what new stories God wants to write over our lives, over our families, over our church, over our community, over our land in our time. I wonder, ladies, what might God be calling you to? What might he be calling you to do as a woman of faith-filled faithfulness? To partner with him in seeing his plans, his purposes, God's dreams becoming a reality, his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. How might he be calling you to step out in faith? What big things might he be calling you to trust him for or to believe that he will do? I wonder what big plans he is calling you to put in place in your life or in the ministry that you are involved with or that he is calling you to. I wonder what great prayers God is calling you out to pray that you might be part of his great story of salvation over this next year. Like Mary, who came after her, Jochebed was no one special. But look what God did through her life when she stepped out in faith and when she trusted God. That's the call this Mother's Day. Not just for mums, not just for ladies, but each of us. How can we become more of a faith-filled people who faithfully follow God and seek together to bring about his kingdom on this earth.